This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or a grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
We are back and we are live. It is Fight IQ presented by RotoWire. We are here to talk UFC Fort Lauderdale, a.k.a. UFC Sunrise, a.k.a. UFC on ESPN plus 8, I think. I've seen tons of names on Twitter floating around. But the main event of this card, there is no question about it, is Ronaldo Jacare Souza taking on Jack the Joker Hermanson. Here on Fight IQ, we are going to break this card down from bottom to top, talking all things DraftKings. I am your host, the Daily Fantasy Sniper, back after my 1 week absence of being a little under the weather. I hope everybody missed me. The guys who were here last week, the analysts of Fight IQ, Chris Olsen, Joe, also known as Sun Tzu. Guys, the most important question, other than did you cash like I did last week, is did you miss me?
Well, you go first, Chris.
Well, I was going to say, I actually gave you a compliment last week, but since you're here now, I can't say anything nice to you. So you'll have to watch it if you want to see it. But I did give you some props last week, begrudgingly, but I did. So
now I got to go listen. Like my ego needs that.
I know. Well, no, I was. Well, any views we can get on the pod, yeah, count. So I'm getting one more in there.
Well, I did miss you, but not for the reasons you might think. I had to listen to the DFS Army pod. I listened to the DFS Army pod, and I think the bug spray trucks in Minnesota were out in force, as Eric Eric F. went on for you. So, yeah.
And you got an inside joke there, guys. But
I know. I didn't cash. I shouldn't say that. I got really fortunate that one of my hedge lineups took third in the $15, which kind of actually broke me even for the card, because nothing else went right for me on that card. So there's one instance of where, you know, spreading in a mass entry actually bailed me out. You know, so yeah, I'm hoping to actually do a bit better this week.
All right, let's see if we can get everybody on that money train. Before we talk about this card, make sure you go to rotowire.com/free, 10-day free trial to all their premium content, no credit card required. We record these live on Friday night. If you are in chat, you can. If you are listening to the replay on iTunes, you can check it out on YouTube. We do record these on Friday. You've got to step away while you are listening to this on Friday. It'll be on iTunes later for your, I was going to say driving to work, but tomorrow, Saturday. But as you're doing yard work pre-card, you can listen to the podcast. I think that's all the intro we have. Oh no, I'm always going to plug Twitter. I'm at the DF Sniper. Chris is at Real Chris Olsen. Joe is at Sun Tzu. Let's get to the first fight of the night. It is Court McGee at 8,700 taking on Diego Lima at 7,500. Court McGee, the favorite, up to -185. Diego Lima +170. Diego Lima got his first, not his first UFC win, but his first win in his second stint in the UFC. Knocking out the very chinny Chad Lapree, who finally paid for his weak chin. Court McGee, typical grinder, been around forever. Joe, who takes this one between really two veterans of the game here?
Yeah, I'm very conflicted, because when I first looked at this fight, I'm like, okay, you know, granted Lima had this flash KO of Chad Lapree. Lapree, everybody and his brother and sister was on him in that last fight, and Lima gets the knockout.
Looking back Lima's on it, by the way, what? Sorry, looking back at that fight, I think everybody said man, if, because Lapree had been hurt a bunch. Man, I hope his chin holds up. Man, I hope his chin holds up. And it doesn't, and he's 7% owned. And we're all like, well, that was stupid.
You know, Lima is like one of those, like, I guess the best analogy I could use is like batting practice pitchers. Like, you know, he really does well, you know, when there's really not a lot on the line. Like, you know, he's dominated two seasons of Tough. And then when he kind of, like, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's nerves, if it's jitters, you know, because he's got some pop, right? And, you know, he's attractively priced. And we all know what Court McGee's going to do. You know, Court McGee pretty much fights the same now as he always has. You know, I don't know that he's evolved all that much. So if I was going to, like, dissect this fight, cash versus GPP, I probably favor Lima in GPPs and McGee in cash, you know, but I have to make a pick here. So based on some people that I respect, I'm going to go against my initial inclination to pick McGee, and I'm going to play Lima. I'm going to take the upset here.
Yeah, we need to talk about who those people are. I feel very good about Court McGee here. I'm worried about the scoring. I have a straight bet on Court McGee. I got him early in the week. I think around minus 155 was the number. So I got a little bit of value on that. I'm Diego Lima to me. He's proved he's.
I am not super confident here, guys. So like this is a GPP flyer here that I'm taking.
Low owned again. I think McGee wins, but I'm worried about his ceiling. How about for you, Chris?
Yeah, this is sort of a weird one to be like, you know, not confident about. I think we've seen Diego Lima just get mugged by wrestlers in the past. I think that's pretty much going to happen again. We know that Court McGee is a tough guy. I don't expect him to, you know, get knocked out terribly by any check left hooks. I think that he keeps himself reasonably safe, which I like about him. That's also part of the reason why that is because he's not very much of a volume guy, but you know, his takedowns are pretty varied. He can hit reactive ones. He can do them up against the cage. I expect some rinse and repeat here. I think in his last fight, Court put up 90+. I think he can get like 2 to 4 takedowns here. And, you know, maybe a couple transitions and in a win here. I think he can pay off. His upside might be a little stunted for GPPs. But, yeah, I think he's pretty safe everywhere. If he wasn't quite so tough, I might be against it, but I think he's just going to grind this out and get it done, as we've seen wrestlers do in the past against Lima. So Court's the pick.
All right. Now probably the most over-talked fight of the whole week. Angela Hill, 9,400, taking on Jody Escobel at 6,800. Angela Hill is a – sorry, I'm swearing. Sorry, RotoWire. Is a batshit crazy, minus 570. Jody Escobel is a plus 480. Chris, how are you approaching this fight? Is assuming you have found the you know, that censorship button to beep out my swearing. If you have found it and got that in, how are you breaking this fight down?
Well, I haven't, which means I'm going to get another letter this week. So thanks a lot for that, Sean. But I think that you know, you say like it's a crazy line, and I guess it's crazy just because
-570.
Yeah, no, I guess it's crazy just because Angela Hill isn't a person you would associate with being a big favorite. But quite honestly, I mean, I see her basically doing whatever she wants in this fight. Jody Escobel is, you know, she's got no power whatsoever. She just sort of wings overhands. She might throw a two-punch combination in there somewhere. But she's not a very developed striker at all. She doesn't wrestle. She doesn't really grapple. I see Angela Hill just sort of using her movement. This is going to stay on the feet. She throws harder. She's a more varied striker. I mean, I understand the line and whatever and the price. You know, it's hard to pay off because Hill doesn't really finish, hasn't really finished her wins in the UFC. But, like, in terms of who's going to win the fight, like, I see zero path to Escobel here. And I say that pretty confidently. I think Hill gets a pretty high-scoring decision. She probably won't pay off unless she finishes, which is a hard pill to swallow for her at this point. But, I mean, the pick's Hill.
Okay, couple things. Andrea Hill's not going to do whatever she wants because she has no takedown or ground game. She could be like, I want to take Jody Esquivel down.
But she doesn't want to do that.
But you said whatever she wants to do. And if she doesn't want to do that.
She never wants to wrestle. If you want to get pedantic with me, we can get pedantic.
Yeah, and we can, and you would be wrong.
No,
but either way, there's definitely a path to victory for Esquivel because she can get takedowns. Now, it's extremely unlikely, but never, there's a path. There's
never
a path
gotten a takedown in the UFC. Never gotten one.
If you're going to take anybody down, it's going to be Angela Hill. I'm just saying there is a path there. I do agree Hill wins this fight way more times than not. She probably doesn't pay off. What's interesting to me, though, is that when Hill wins, they're high-volume striking battles. At 6,800, Esquivel's going to be the chalk cash punt of this card, and it's what I'm pretty comfortable with. I don't think Hill's going to finish her. I think Esquivel can land. Just what? Esquivel doesn't throw volume, a ton of volume. Esquivel forces volume out of people. Or Hill forces volume out of people. Hill makes people who is not high volume strikers into high volume strikers. Go look at the logs. Go look at UFCstats.com. It's right there.
But how does she win? How does she win?
Wait. I'm not talking about winning. I'm on to it being a viable cash game punt. I will take my 35 cash points at 6,800 all day, every day.
I mean, okay. That's like your absolute ceiling too. I mean,
No, I hope Esquivel takes her down because Hill's ground game is garbage. Joe.
Yeah. So, okay. So I honestly don't see a lot of opportunities here for Jody Esquivel to win either. I mean, and let's be honest. Okay. So Angela Hill should not be a 6-1 favorite against Stevie Wonder. So let's kind of put that on the table. However, I do have to agree with Chris. I think that Angela Hill can win this anywhere and could potentially put her away. I look at this the other way. I like Angela Hill as a really safe upper-tier play in cash. And I don't like Esquivel at all. Now, I will be honest in saying I don't see this as a very cash-friendly card. So I'm not going to play a lot of cash. But if I was, I think you could get a solid 90 to 95 points out of Angela Hill, relatively safe, 90 to 95 points, where I don't know that I could say that with everybody else in that upper tier. So I like Angela Hill for cash. I don't like Esquivel a lot. I'm going to play her just because I'm going to max out in mass entry. But other than that, this is a great stylistic matchup for Angela Hill. So she's the pick here.
Jim Miller, 8,600. Jason Gonzalez, 7,600. Jim Miller, -135. Jason Gonzalez, +125. Someone just posted four picks in chat, and kind of made it seem like they were picking going out on a limb. I've seen tons of people picking all four of the fighters listed, and one of them was the underdog in Jason Gonzalez. I think he's going to be a pretty trendy dog here at 7,600. Joe, who do you have?
Yeah, so it's interesting because – and I should say that Gonzalez helped me, win a major GPP when he kind of came from behind against JT Cottrell.
JC
Cottrell and got that choke out. He was a dog, and that was my one dog, and then the rest of my favorites won. So I had a really good slate. However, it's interesting that the momentum on Gonzalez is purely based on a loss that he had to Gregor Gillespie, and then, subsequently took a year off. So that's the recency bias. Like, this guy looked okay in a dominating loss against Gregor Gillespie, and now he's taking a year off. Now, is Jason Gonzalez that much better than White, who Jim Miller, recently beat? Now look, believe it or not, there's only 2 years apart here. In age, everybody, Miller's this grizzled veteran who's got a ton of fights, and maybe he's got more fight years on him than Gonzalez. But Gonzalez is not a kid. He's 33 years old. Miller's 35. Okay, so we're not talking a lot of years here, right? So you've got Miller who should be able to beat a guy like Jason Gonzalez. I mean, he beat Alex White, southpaw. Gonzalez is a southpaw. And then, talk about the who's who of losses. Oliveira, Hooker, Trinaldo, Pettis. Yeah, he shit the bed against those guys. Poirier, though, that was a really good fight against Poirier. He hurt Poirier pretty badly with his kicks. But anyway, when I first looked at this fight, I'm like, you know, does Gonzalez have a chance? All the technical signs here point to Miller. Would I be surprised if Jason Gonzalez won? No. But I'm going to have to go with Jim Miller here. I think this is the kind of guy that – now, Miller will be undersized here. This is the kind of guy that Miller should be able to beat and maybe even submit. So I'm going to go with Jim Miller here. I would say that, you know, have some shares of Gonzalez at 7.6. He has made me money in the past, which is why I may have more than I probably should have. But if you're asking me to pick a winner, it's going to be Jim Miller.
Yeah, I think people are relying a lot on Jim Miller's age. And what's the other thing?
Really, before mostly, I told you, Sean, did you know that they were only 2 years apart before I mentioned it?
I did, but Jim Miller is not so much age, just being fight-worn.
Oh,
Jim
absolutely. Miller, he's Jim, grizzled,
Jim,
man.
Jim Miller's been in the game a long time. People are expecting a decline from him. And really, this interesting, and the size advantage. I think people are going off of size.
Yeah, you're right.
On those two things. Yep. For me, I lean Jim Miller. I get it. At some point, it's going to fall off. Chris, is it Saturday night?
I don't think so. Look, nothing about Jim Miller's recent losses have told me that, like, he's done. I mean, I pretty much expected that that Charles Oliveira fight to go down like that, but that's Charles Oliveira, you know. So a guy like Jason Miller, I mean, he gets hit a ton. He can't really stop takedowns, although I will say he did better in that Gregor Gillespie fight than he had in the past. It's just that Gillespie's so relentless that eventually he got him to where he wanted him. But I think that, you know, Gonzalez, the guy, he loves his head kicks. He could definitely land one and maybe, you know, take Miller out. But I think Miller can use his wrestling. He can try to put his punches together. He's actually a decent counter puncher. Loves those counter elbows, which could be a thing here. We saw him get rocked from a counter elbow in that Gillespie fight, actually. I just think that Gonzalez has too many deficiencies, too many holes here that I would be surprised if a vet like Miller wouldn't be able to exploit. Again, I could see him catching him with a head kick or something and knocking Jim Miller out, or maybe like wobbling him and jumping on an opportunistic submission or something like that. But I can't count on that because, again, Gonzalez is just too raw, and Miller still has like a good, solid fundamental game. And if he's going to be like the contrarian pay up, I'll go for that too. So I'm taking Jim Miller here.
All right, next fight we have Gilbert Durinho Burns, 9,100, taking on Mike Davis at 7,100. Burns is -245. Davis is +225. Burns is one of my favorite plays on the entire card. Chris, are you with me or are you against me?
I'm with you, but with some trepidation.
Of course. Of course you are.
No, because, look, Mike Davis is a scary dude, man. He's big. He's athletic. He hits hard. He's a decent technical boxer. He gave us, I think, one of the best contender series fights we've ever seen against Sadiq Youssef. And also, something you have to note is that Gilbert Burns gets hurt a lot. Even in fights he wins, he gets hurt.
I think he was bad, yeah.
When he gets hurt, I mean, that's when he tends to wrestle. Mike Davis has a wrestling pedigree, but I can't really see him being that great defensively just because of how upright he is and his lack of footwork. It would surprise me if, like, he was able to stop Gilbert Burns from just running through him if he wanted to. But having said all that, you know, Mike Davis is dangerous, man. What really has me picking Gilbert Burns here is he's a pretty underrated counterpuncher, I think. The Jason Sago fight where he sent him into the next dimension with a counter overhand comes to mind. I think that's really going to pay dividends here because Mike Davis tends to overextend into a lot of his shots. But could he connect with a shot and knock knock Burns out or hurt him? I think, of course, he could. I don't see why that couldn't happen. But I think Burns is the more technical fighter. I think the wrestling is going to come into play, and I think the grappling is going to come into play. That has me picking Burns, but I would say the first thing I would say is have both sides of this fight, and because I think it's going to be high scoring. And second thing is, I guess they're both the same. I was going to say don't ignore it, but that's kind of the same thing. So, yeah, Gilbert Burns is the pick.
Yeah, I much have here on Burns, Joe.
Yeah, so, Chris, question. I see the boxing pedigree. Where are you, like, what is your source of information for Mike Davis's wrestling pedigree?
That's just something they always say in his fights that he has.
Yeah, because I mean, I see him more as a boxer.
No, and I would agree. I've never seen him go for offensive takedowns, but I figured it was worth mentioning because every fight he's in, the announcers mention it. So
yeah, also, you know, he bounces around between 145 and 155. Not crazy about his camp. Unless you guys can tell me that Pete White boxing in MMA is better than I might think it is. I like Burns a fair amount here. My concern is similar to Chris's in that Burns doesn't always exhibit the best fight IQ. I mean, I think if he fights the right fight, he could win this, you know, and score well. You know, if he doesn't fall in love with his striking and try to make this a boxing match, I'm going to go ahead and pick Burns, but I think it's 7.1K. For GPPs, I don't think it's an awful idea to have a few shares of Davis. But I'm with you, Sean. I like Burns. I like Burns a fair amount here.
I need to circle back because some discussion came up about Jason Gonzalez. Sure Dog had it listed at 29. His age at 29. Joe, I know both you and I use Tapology, and he's listed at 33 there. I dug into the UFC site, and it looks like he's actually 29 years old.
Really? Okay.
So Tapology's got an error on there. So
okay.
Don't think he's improved enough, but yeah, in terms of the edge. So thanks to the guys in chat for pointing that out.
Appreciate that.
Move on to Carla Esparza, 8,200, taking on Vernia Jandaroba. At 8,000, Jandaroba, the former Invicta champ, or I guess current Invicta champ, but she's moving to the UFC. She's actually the favorite now at 8,000. She's minus 120. Esparza is plus 110. The line has flipped. It is our mid-range fight, and to me it is exactly a mid-range fight because this is the one I've been flip-flopping with the whole time. Esparza has improved on the feet. I think she'll be better on the feet than Jandaroba. Jandaroba's got great BJJ. Esparza has a wrestling background. Taking Tatiana Suarez out of the equation, we saw her taken down by Randa Marcos. So it comes down to, can Jandaroba get this fight to the ground? And then regardless, for our purposes in DraftKings, is the winner going to score? I think people are going to largely ignore this fight. I'm picking Esparza. I'll have a couple shares, but this is a fight probably to be underweight on. I'm picking Carla Esparza in a really interesting – a fight I'm actually looking forward to watching, but it's not good for DraftKings. Joe.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much nailed it there, Sean. I mean, I think our Esparza is worth a bet here at plus money.
Yeah, I just saw the line flip for the first time.
I'm going to wait a little bit. I think everybody is getting suckered in by this 14-0 record, and I think Esparza obviously – I mean, look, I'm like a Tatiana Suarez fanboy. I mean, you know, I love Tatiana Suarez. I make no bones about it. I like everything about her. I like the way she fights. I like the way she looks, whatever. Okay. Sue me for being superficial, but I also like the way she fights.
I think she'll be a champ in 2019.
Yeah. So do I. I think she could take Andrade, who I believe is going to beat Rosnami Yunus. But anyway, so let's not hold that fight against Carla Esparza. She dominated Calvillo, right? And then arguably beat Claudia Gadelha. I mean, so, like, where is all this hate coming for Esparza? I mean, you know, so I like Esparza as a bet here. From a DraftKings perspective, like I said, you pretty much took all the thunder on this one. From a DraftKings perspective, yeah. I mean, she's only scored over 80 points twice in her career. So I have to believe that, you know, she's even in a win, she's not going to be a high scorer. And she will have, believe it or not, like when was the last time you heard that Esparza has a striking advantage? She's going to have a striking advantage here. I think she's a better wrestler than, John Aroba, but John Aroba's probably is a better jiu-jitsu fighter. So I don't know that Esparza will look to take her down unless it's opportunistic. So I'm going to say Esparza looks like a really solid bet at plus money. Although for DraftKings, I would not have a whole lot of exposure to this fight. And I'm going to pick Esparza to win.
All right, Chris, say something contrarian.
Well, no, I just think that John DeRoba, I mean, the fact that she's getting so much love isn't just because she's undefeated. It's because she has like 12 subs out of 14 wins or whatever it is. So she's gonna be hunting for that takedown and sub early and often. And, you know, if she gets it, you know, that's a lot of points, obviously. I agree.
The takedown and sub?
Yeah.
I think we all agree that the sub will happen if it gets to the ground, but what do you think the odds are of John DeRoba getting Esparza down?
I don't know. I mean, like you said, we've seen her take number four, and not just by Tatiana Suarez. So, I mean, when you have – and, I mean, if you look at her – if you look at John DeRoba's double legs, they're fairly technical. I mean, there's nothing – They're not the prettiest things in the world, but they're not sloppy or anything.
No, I agree. I'm not. I wasn't a shot. I'm legitimately.
No. I know.
I think whatever percentage you give her to get the fight to the ground is her percentage to win the fight.
Simple. I agree, and I think she keeps herself safe enough. I mean, the interesting thing about her is, like, I was trying to analyze her game on the feet, but there's not that much to analyze because she honestly doesn't throw that much. She just sort of stands on the outside and waits for her opportunity to enter for a takedown. So that's why I think that, like, if Esparza wins this, I mean, I agree that, like, I've been saying for a while that I think her boxing is really underrated. I think that she even has a little bit of power in her hands that we saw in the Claudia Gadelha fight. But I think that if she wins this fight, I think it's really going to be like a low striking affair, just because Vondrova doesn't lend herself to that. You know, she's not going to be hanging out in the pocket. She's going to be, again, on the outside waiting for her opportunities to enter. So I would either probably take Vondrova or pass this fight, because I think Vondrova's upside, her ceiling is pretty high, and can't say the same thing about Gadelha. So that's pretty much my read on the fight. If I was going to say who's going to win, I don't know. I'll say that Gadelha keeps it on the feet, but I'm not very certain about that. But again, for DraftKings, I think Vondrova is the much more interesting play.
Hang on, I got to take care of something in chat. Oh, now I'm getting somebody type a bunch of messages. We have some very nice, humble person dropping Avenger spoilers.
I almost cursed.
I want to hear it.
Thor is fat isn't a spoiler, but
no, that I've cleared a bunch of them. So okay. Anyway, I'm not going to read out the name because you don't deserve any publicity. Anyway, Augusto Sakai, 8,400, taking on Andre Arlovsky at 7,800. Sakai minus 140. Arlovsky is plus 130. It's a shame that Chris goes first for this fight, because Sakai's recent opponent is Chase Sherman. So I'm sure we'll get a Chase Sherman rant at some point. It's how far has this fight's easy, actually. How far has Arlovsky fallen? If it's far, Sakai will score well in a win. If it's Arlovsky, he probably doesn't score great in a win unless you think lightning strikes twice. The most interesting thing about this fight to me is that it's one of those. I wish I was in the pod last week. I was way overweight to the field on Abdurakhimov and Tybura, because it's a heavyweight fight that nobody wants any part of. Like, when I can get heavyweights underowned, now I'm interested. And I think this fight's going to go underowned. I get why the doesn't go to decision is what it is. But yeah, I have some interest here, especially in the guy I'm picking, and that is Andre Arlovsky. Chris.
Yeah. Funny, going back watching that Sakai Sherman fight, It's a shame because those first two rounds were probably the best Chase Sherman's ever looked in the octagon. He was, you know, really putting combinations together well. My thing about Sakai is he tends to really overextend on his right hands a lot, and that's sort of why he was Sherman was countering him so effectively. He likes to sort of get you in the clinch and rough you up, but I mean, Arlovski, he might not be the biggest guy, but he's very physical in there. He, you know, we saw him muscling around Walt Harris for certain parts of that fight, and you know, he's a very fast, very clean boxer. He's got a nice jab. Jab overhand right is basically all he does these days, sometimes throwing a light kick. But, I mean, it works for him in sort of a minimalistic way. And we've seen him throw in the wrestling now, too, which I think could be another important aspect of this fight. I just like Arlovski to be the cleaner striker and get this done. So my pick is Andre Arlovski.
I think it's a matter of how much does he score. That's what everybody's saying in chat, and I agree with that. I'm not going to go crazy. Everyone's saying the same thing. I like it for GPPs, just because no one else is going to be on them. Anyway, Joe.
I have Sakai by KO here.
That's the other way to go.
Yeah, I have him by KO. I wasn't like super impressed with his performance against Chase Sherman. Obviously, he got the finish, which is important. Can anyone recall whether that was a short notice fight for him or not? I can't recall specifically. He is a huge heavyweight. He cuts to make 265.
Well, he's fat.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, that's well, okay. We could go with that.
He's got he's got a lot of extra weight, and just the Chase Sherman thing, that was the fight where Chase Sherman had like some leg issue in the third round and couldn't stand up, went to the ground, like kind of like sat down, and Sakai finished him.
I mean, look, Sakai's only loss is a split decision loss to Czech Congo, which is not a horrible loss. So I am going to I know that Arlovski has dodged the KO over his last couple fights against Tuivasa, and you know, I'm going to say that this is the fight where, you know, his chin fails him again. And I'm going to take Sakai here by KO.
I mean, I honestly can't believe we're still talking about chin narratives. How long has it been? And check out the heavyweights that knocked him out, too.
I know, dude. I get it. I'm just going to me, this is like an age fade. And Sakai is 27 years old. He's a big heavyweight. Yes, I got it. I mean, I'm saying is going to fail him again. Not that he's, you know, he's been losing by decision the last, you know, for a while. So I'm okay with that.
Let's move on to Takashi Sato, 9,000, taking on Ben Killaby Saunders at 7,200. Sato is minus 200. Saunders is plus 185. Good does not go to decision prop in this fight. Saunders clearly has chin issues. This is another one where I'm looking to go against what everyone else is saying. And I also just don't think Sato's that good. Pancrase isn't a great promotion, guys. I took a small shot on Ben Saunders, very small, by the way. But I think it's worth it. I think he's actually, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but skill for skill, I actually think Ben Saunders is a better fighter. I think he'll maintain range better. I think he's got a better ground game. It's a matter of does that chin hold up, and it very well could not. If Saunders goes to sleep, I'm not going to be surprised at all. I just think Sato is going to get really high owned for what his skill set is. Joe, I know we both like Ben Saunders as a person. I also know that you think I am crazy because I know you were all about him versus Lyman Good, which I had tons of Lyman Good too. But are you continuing your Ben Saunders has a glass chin and is done kind of streak?
Man, I really do like Ben Saunders, and like the non-DraftKings part of me, of my persona, would love to see Ben Saunders go out on a win. You know, I had some conversations with him, and I'm like, dude, and he's like, you know, he's like, well, you know, that's what happens when you fight. And I'm like, dude, I just don't want to see you take any more punishment. I mean, you know, so
hang on, is that what you said to him?
Yeah, I said, dude, I don't want to see you take more punishment. You know,
what did he say?
like, you know, like that's kind of the business I'm in, you know? And look, he's a great guy. He's personable with fans. This is a fight in his backyard, Florida. I'd love for him to, well, I'm afraid that if he wins this, he won't retire. But yeah, I don't know a lot about this Sato guy. I know Pancreas is not a great promotion. I think if there's a fight recently of late that Saunders could win, it might be this one. I'm still going to pick Sato here, but I would say that given that Saunders has a floor of zero, that this is purely a GPP fight for me. I would take some shares of Saunders here in GPPs because, look, he's got a great jiu-jitsu game. He's got some power with knees. I mean, look, everybody, I think my daughter could have KO'd Ellenberger at the end of his career, so I'm not putting a lot of stock in that KO, but I'm going to pick Sato here reluctantly. I would not be upset if Saunders got the win. Good fight to target for GPPs.
Chris.
Yeah, I like Sato a little bit. I think the speed difference and is just going to be so overwhelming. Like Ben Saunders just kind of plods and throws body kicks. I expect him to eat some straight lefts that Sato throws really hard and maybe go to sleep. It's not that Sato can't be hit. It's just that Ben Saunders doesn't really have a boxing game. He'll throw his 1-2s or whatever, but it's basically just body kicks and a jiu-jitsu game to where he never wrestles. So unless he gets the fight there through a knockdown or something like that, the fight's not really going to hit the floor. I agree with you that Pancrase isn't really the best organization. I think Diachi Abi was a champion over there. So, I mean, you know, take that for what it's worth. But
How dare you insult Daichi Abe?
I don't. That's like, I mean, the fight he had with Hong Ju Lim was awesome. But I just think that Saunders is, look, he just doesn't do enough for me. And I mean, unless it's going to be a situation where he's gonna catch somebody in the clinch like Jake Ellenberger, and even last fight where he got the clinch that he wanted, it led to him getting knocked out. So I don't think you can trust him. Anything, I'm taking Sato and pretty confident about it.
All right, Roosevelt Roberts, 9,500, taking on, God, I don't even know his first name, Thomas Gifford.
Thomas.
I wanted to say Tom, but I was close. 6,700. Roberts, massive favorite, best prospect on this, second best prospect on this card, but I do think he is legit. Gifford is an okay grappler, and I think Roberts is better at it. That should spell disaster. I like Roberts if you can fit him. Chris.
I've never been – well, he's only had one fight, so I shouldn't say never, but I'm not really that high on Roberts. I think he's basically – he doesn't have much of a striking game. He's basically just a grappler who I guess can wrestle somewhat, but doesn't wrestle a ton. And you know, his opponent here, though, is like, can't stop a takedown. He kind of has his takedown defense is trying to slap on guillotines and triangles and work from the bottom, which is never really what you want. And so I definitely see why people think that Roberts can snatch a quick sub here. But you know, you look at the record for the opponent. I think it's 12-7. Doesn't look that great, but you know, he's not altogether terrible. I mean, he's sort of quick on his feet. He can throw in combination. He seems reasonably okay defensively on the feet. So I think that I don't think he's like absolutely dead, but the problem is I see Roosevelt getting this fight to the floor at some point, and I don't think he's just going to like fall into a guillotine or whatever the way that his opponents on the regional scene have. So I guess I have to take Roberts by sub here, but I should note that he hasn't impressed me all that much, so I can't like super strongly throw my endorsement behind him, but I do think the most likely outcome is that he wins this by sub.
Joe.
Yeah, what I find interesting about this fight is that Gifford is 26 years old, at least according to Tapology. Someone, you know, feel free to correct me, is 26 years old, has had 24 professional fights, and like a dozen amateur fights. He's been fighting since 2010. So, you know, do the math. I mean, that's at 26 years old. I mean, you know, he had his first fight at what, 17, and on the amateurs. So, you know, he reminds me a lot of Gerald Meerschaert. I mean, Meerschaert. He has these streaks where he's got a bunch of losses and then he strings together some wins. I mean, you know, he is what I would refer to as a journeyman, lunch pail type of fighter. I think he's, you know, Roosevelt is being set up to get the win here. I don't know how much exposure I'll have to him have of him at that price, because if this goes into the second round, you're probably not going to get your value on Roosevelt at 9.5. I will have a little bit of Guilford, not much. You know, I'll maybe be at 5% in mass entry, but I'm going to pick Roosevelt Robert here. But you know, he's 7-0 at 25, and the other guy has got 24 and a dozen amateur fights at 26. So just make that with what you will.
Sean, you're muted. You're muted.
Sean, your mic is muted.
I'm muted.
I was on a different screen. Sorry, guys. I couldn't yet get to the microphone. All right, let's try this again. John Lineker, 8,500, taking on Corey Sandhagen at 7,700. Lineker, minus 135. The comeback on Sandhagen is plus 125. Between you, me, and everyone, this is really the co-main event of the card. This is a fantastic fight. Joe, who do you have winning it?
Yeah, this is really interesting. I mean, this is a massive, like, I get that people like Corey Sandhagen. I mean, I like the guy too. I like the way he fights. I mean, you know, what he did against, you know, Uriel Contra was great. I mean, he essentially almost lost an arm. But let's look at what happened to him. He actually, you know, was getting his ass beat by Uriel Contra before he turned it around. He's been DraftKings Gold, which is more than enough reason to have shares of him in GPPs. I think this is a good fight to target, but this is a huge step up for him. I mean, I get the physical advantages that he has. I just don't believe he's faced anyone that has the power of John Lineker. So I am going to take Lineker here, but I certainly would recommend targeting this fight in GPPs. I'm looking for a war. So I'm excited to see this fight, but I'm going to go with Lineker. Sean, you're muted.
Again. It's okay.
That I didn't do. That was weird.
Okay.
Let's try this again. Chris. I on the other hand, like Sandhagen in this fight.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting to me. Like, I love Corey Sandhagen. He's so slick. The body work, the leg kicks, he can wrestle a little bit. He's got great movement, and I think that's the key to this fight. John Lineker is just sort of a stalking brawler. He's the king of the stalking brawlers. I like the fact that he does body work as well, which most brawlers don't. But that's what's going to be so interesting to me is can Sandhagen land his strikes, get out of the pocket, and hit reactive takedowns? If he can do that, he's going to win. This is not unlike the TJ Dillashaw fight so much, which is funny because Sandhagen actually reminds me of TJ Dillashaw a little bit, just like in his movement and But it's interesting to me because even the guys who Lineker fights who do well in the first round, generally he breaks them down with his pressure and just sort of finds them with his strikes. I don't know if Sandhagen – look, as you said, it's a huge step up. So, I mean, his last fight was against Mario Bautista, and now he's fighting John Lineker. So it's really interesting. I think that Sandhagen always keeps his hands low because he relies on his movement, so he can very easily get caught on the chin here. That shouldn't surprise anyone if it happens. But I think Sandhagen is definitely live here. If he can, you know, use those leg kicks, start breaking him down, get in and out of the pocket, and use his wrestling, he can win this fight. The problem is he's got to be perfect in a way that he probably has never had to be perfect in his life before. He's got to fight a perfect fight for 3 rounds. I don't know if he can do it. I'm going to have to, at the end of the day, go with Lineker here just because I just don't know if he can be that on for that long. So my pick is John Lineker, but it's going to be a great fight.
Ion Cutelaba, 8,300, taking on Glover Teixeira at 7,900. The line is flipped. Teixeira is now the favorite, minus 120. Cutelaba is the dog now at plus 110. This fight screams GPP. I'm wondering if people are going to take cash shots based on odds value even after the Fiziev disaster last week. Great fight. Give me Teixeira if his chin holds up, because Cutelaba fights like a moron. That being said, that aggression, that moronic aggression, is his only path to victory here. So, Chris, how's it going to go?
Yeah, the dynamic in most Glover fights, at least for the past year or so, have basically been if he can't wrestle, he loses, and if he can wrestle, he wins. In this fight, I expect him to get a lot of purchase off that single leg dump that he loves to use. Antigulov got about three of them even before he lost the fight in the first round, which should tell you a lot about Cutelaba's takedown defense. Now, can Cutelaba overwhelm him before that happens? Sure, he can, but Teixeira is still otherworldly tough. Despite, you know, that knockout a couple years ago by Anthony Johnson, you might expect maybe his chin to take a turn for the worse after that, and it really hasn't. I mean, we saw him getting battered by the fight before his last one. I can't remember. Anyway, we saw him getting battered in that fight. I'll look for it. We saw him getting in the Carl Roberson fight.
Roberson, where he was knocked out and woke back up.
Well, yeah, the elbows and got back up.
He was out.
Finished, yeah.
He was out, woke back up, and got a finish.
Yeah. But, long story short, he's a tough guy, and wrestling is a really, really big Achilles heel for Cutelaba. I also think that Teixeira will probably even still be the better technical striker here. Cutelaba just basically likes to wing shots and pressure, which again can overwhelm Glover and finish him. But I think Glover is too savvy here. He's got too many tools, and that wrestling and jiu-jitsu is just too much of an ace. So I got to go with Glover here.
Joe.
Yeah, I mean, I I'm on Glover. I see Cutelaba as a lower fight IQ version of Carl Roberson with green paint. He's going to be very highly owned. It's not a secret. 7.9K line flip, lots of value on Glover. I would certainly target this fight, have shares of Cutelaba as well, because he could certainly, he could certainly win this fight. But I'm on to share here at 7.9K. Favorite play under 8K.
Moving on, we have Alex Cowboy Oliveira, 8,800, taking on Mike Platinum Perry at 7,400. Oliveira minus 160, Perry plus 150, another fight that screams finish. I will say that I am picking Oliveira to win, but I have a sneaking suspicion here. Perry is incredibly live in that he's the type of guy that Oliveira struggles with. And I mean that if Perry is tough, he's nothing if he's not tough. And man, as fights get later, unless Oliveira is totally dominant, he fades a little bit. When he faces adversity, don't exactly like what I see. And if Perry can drag this late into the first round, deeper water, especially second and third, live to a finish, we know he hits hard, dumbass fight IQ, but in terms of if he wins, he'll be on the optimal. So I like this fight a bunch for GPP. The pick is Oliveira for me. Perry, one of my favorite GPP plays in the card, though. Yo.
Yeah, so I want people to look at Perry's stat line here. And let's just go back to 2016, Alan Joban. Okay, loss. Jake Ellenberger, retired. Alex Reyes, out of the UFC. Lost to Ponzinibbio, lost to Griffin. Wins a split decision against Felder, who broke his arm in that fight. Lost to Cowboy Cerrone. Okay, not exactly a stellar resume here. Exciting fighter. I have to believe almost anyone else would have been cut. After losing to Ponzinibbio and Griffin, Felder, I think, could have won that fight if he didn't break his arm. He should have won that fight. Even though he was a bit undersized. Cerrone, I believe he was the favorite going into that fight. It was a -200 favorite, and he gets caught. You know, he foolishly tries to take Cerrone down and gets caught. Not a big fan of Perry's fight IQ. My only concern is that Oliveira doesn't fight smart here, which is a very big concern, and tries to turn this into a brawl in which anything can happen. I honestly see Oliveira better everywhere. Striking, wrestling, ground game, jiu-jitsu, everywhere. So I
except
really,
toughness.
I really like Oliveira everywhere.
No.
Except if he decides to make this a brawl. I'm going to pick Oliveira. I like him a lot here. We'll have some exposure to Perry. Great fight to target in GPPs. The pick is Alex Oliveira.
All right. I don't think I've ever been more offended than by that last comment. Except toughness. Did you watch that Yancy Medeiros fight?
And the tides turned against him. Yeah, he took punishment. He just
for three rounds. What do you're acting like he quits as soon as you're acting like he quits as soon as it gets tough. You have to kill him to get him out of there. Medeiros had to kill him. Gunnar Nelson had to put a hole in his head to where the blood wouldn't stop pouring to stop the fight. I mean, the idea that he's just gonna like relent the first time he gets hit is crazy. That's not even close to what to Drew.
First him means fight. He was looking for a way out.
I look, that's one fight, and then he came back and it wins the rematch handily. So I don't know
which I picked him in, by the way. So let's not get too crazy.
I had him in both, so I was happy, and then
one and one.
Sad and then happy, yeah. But my problem with Mike Perry is like I don't know why, but it seems like ever since he went to Jackson Wink, like he's gone from like a stalking combination puncher with power to like a stalking one shot guy with power. Like he seems very inactive lately, which isn't good for a style like his, because he doesn't really do much besides throw power. Like that's what he does. He should be trying to get guys out of there, the entire fight. And like, if he's only going to throw one punch, like you're not going to knock. And this goes to my earlier point. You're very unlikely. Let me say that, to knock Oliveira out with one punch. You have to really, stop him. And to Joe's point about lack of fight IQ to Oliveira, Oliveira's lack of fight IQ skews towards wrestling. He tends to wrestle when he shouldn't. But here he should wrestle, so we don't really have any problems there. If he wrestles here, and I think he should and he will, I think he's going to very handily out-grapple Mike Perry.
But you agree you don't want it to turn into a brawl, right? That's where the danger is.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I think that, even in a brawl, I would favor Oliveira. Like, it wouldn't be my favorite thing, because it would even the playing field a little bit. But I would favor Oliveira. He's got the range. He's got a strong kicking game. And again, Mike Perry basically just throws singular hard shots now. So and he's tried to wrestle a lot too. So if he goes for that again, then we're all set. But I agree that Mike Perry is live to a finish because he hits hard. But I don't really see it as that realistic. I think Oliveira is better everywhere, to Joe's point. And I'm picking him pretty comfortably here.
All right, moving on to our co-main event, which let's please keep the analysis short on this one. In Greg Hardy, 9,300, taking on Dmitry Smoliakov at 6,900. Hardy -320, Smoliakov +290. UFC dragging in any warm body they can to try and get Hardy a win, who was, before he got disqualified against Alan Crowder, lost the first round to Alan Crowder, was getting touched up, and they brought in somebody worse. They brought in somebody who is getting finished by Cyril Asker. It's just, it's hard to trust for cash. Hardy should win. Superior athlete, and it's just, it's so upsetting to have to break this fight down, especially as a co-main event. Like, you want to give the guy a shot in the UFC, we can have that of debate, but okay, he's here. Co-main event, it's insulting for Oliveira, Perry, Teixeira, Kutalaba, Sandhagen, Lineker, like everybody else in the main card. Hell, I would make Esparza John DeRoba the co-main event before this friggin' fight. But this is where we are. I'm picking Hardy to win. I'll have a couple shares of Smoliakov because Greg Hardy is a dumbass, and he's only been training MMA a few years, and Smoliakov, while terrible, has been doing it longer than that. And I was way over analysis of this fight. I apologize.
It was more a rant than anything, which I kind of
it should be. I mean, it needed to be said.
I agree. But look, I think that it's just so weird. Like, because like Smoliakov, they always say, and he was brought in and billed as a master of sport in wrestling, but we haven't seen him wrestle at all in the octagon. He's one of these guys. He came in. He had all finishes in the first round, a lot of which were in like the first minute or soon thereafter. He got to a second round against Henrique da Silva and looked horrible, like he was about to fall asleep. Like he was so gassed, it was unbelievable. I think that look, if he can wrestle, he might win the fight. But like you said or alluded to, Hardy can probably just win this on athleticism. Unfortunately, I would say have more Smoliakov. I'm more higher on him than you are, just because if he can wrestle, and I mean we've seen his defensive wrestling isn't that bad, so maybe he can wrestle offensively, but we haven't seen it. But if he can wrestle, I think that's a pretty clear path to victory. He's pretty tough. I mean, he got hit with some big shots in the Henrique da Silva fight, and was still there. Cyril Askew, of course, that's a bad loss, of course. I would never dispute that. But that was a ground loss, and Harvey's not going to take it there. On the feet, Smoliakov just tries to, like, lunge forward with strikes. So Hardy could catch him that way, too. I think Hardy probably wins, but for $6,900 and a guy who has a wrestling pedigree, even if we haven't seen it, I think you have to have, I think you have to dip your toe in the Smoliakov waters. A bit more than maybe you would like to, I think.
Joe.
Yeah, I mean, you guys said it all. Hardy to win based on athleticism. I don't know whether he's going to earn salary, especially if this gets into the second round. In mass entry GPPs, I would take a few shots with the Russian, but I'm going to pick Hardy to win here.
All right, let's talk about our main event. Ronaldo Jacare Souza, 8,900, taking on Jack the Joker Hermanson at 7,300. Jacare minus 200. Comeback on Hermanson plus 185. Hermanson coming off of the submission win over David Branch. Souza, hanging around the top of the middleweight division, wanted to fight Romero, claims the UFC is going to give him a title shot if he wins this fight, which if they said that to him, they're lying to him. No way, especially Whitaker will be ready. Look, I think Jacare wins as long as he doesn't get Hermanson's path to victory is dragging Souza into deep waters. Hermanson's got to be tough, not let this fight hit the ground. I know Hermanson's good in the ground. Jacare's better. Jacare throws power. We saw it against Weidman. I think Jacare is prone to gassing out. We've seen it a couple times. We saw it against Kelvin Gastelum. I think that's Hermanson's best path to victory, dragging this fight late. I think it is a stackable fight. I think Hermanson is live because Souza is getting older. It's shown he's not totally invincible. I do think Jacare is a little better everywhere, except Hermanson's probably a better technical striker and a little faster. Souza, though, just throws hard. It's a superior ground game. He's my pick here. We'll play both sides. Joe, kick us off in the main event.
Yeah, this is pretty easy for me. I mean, the UFC has a habit of, like, putting fighters in coming off of impressive fights, regardless of whether they're overmatched or not. Look, I could be surprised here, and Hermanson can do something remarkable and take Jacare Souza down at 39 years old. You know, not take him down, but win. Although my pick here is Sosa. I'm going to pick Sosa here. I would advise playing Hermanson. This is a good fight to target. Does not go to decision. I think it's like -5 to 1. I would, certainly consider, having a lot of this fight in GPPs for sure.
Chris, main event.
Yeah, I don't see. I mean, there are things about Jacare's recent performance that troubled me, the Weidman fight notwithstanding. I mean, I keep having going back to him having Gastelum in full mount in the middle of the cage and not being able to finish him. But having that said, that I mean, look at the Jack Hermanson wins for the last like 2 or 3 years. They're all grappling based. And then he had the loss to he had the knockout loss to Thiago Santos thrown in there. But I think that Jack Hermanson is probably going to try to force the grapple, even though he shouldn't, because I think that's where he's most comfortable at this point in his career. And I mean, look, he probably got some confidence. He just subbed a Renzo Gracie black belt in like 2 seconds in his last fight. So I'm sure that gave him a little bit of confidence. I agree with you that he's probably the more technical striker. He can work behind a jab. But, you know, Jacare is a pretty decent counter striker, even if his counter game isn't all that developed. And he throws hard even when he's tired. We saw that in the Calvin Gastelum fight. So his not quitting is really important. And look, we saw even though he ended up coming back and winning that fight in what can only be described as heroic fashion, he was in trouble in that Talis Ladies fight, and it was a grappling base. And you know, Ladies was probably like 2 inches from getting an arm triangle choke on him there. So Jacare has to be the pick. I mean, I guess you can play Hermanson for all the reasons you mentioned, but my general rule is that if a fighter is going to give somebody a fight they want, you got to pick the guy who's going to get the fight they want. And to me, that's Jacare here.
All right, let's talk hot takes. Who is your hot take for UFC Fort Lauderdale? Nothing chalky, guys. Let's.
Okay, here's a bet. Here's a bet that will pay you +225, at least. Maybe higher, depending on the website, depending on the book. Glover Teixeira by submission. The DK Sports book is at +225 on that. I believe Five Dimes and Others might be slightly higher. I think that is a very likely way for Teixeira to win. So Teixeira by submission +225 to +250, I think offers some great value.
Yeah, that's I don't know how hot that is. Those odds seem a little off, but
those are the odds though. So look, if it was like an even money, I wouldn't have even offered it up.
I got you. Okay, fair enough. Chris, you got one?
So yeah, I wasn't gonna pick this, but since you guys have seeming to go against it, can I do Smolyakov by submission?
Yeah, you can.
That is fantastic. Ridiculously hot.
That's white hot, dude.
Let me go with. All right, I'll get real crazy here. Carla Esparza knocks out Virna Jandaroba.
Wow.
There you go.
TKO, I should clarify, but I think the striking could be good enough here. I think it could be an issue.
Nice.
All right, guys. Make sure to go to rotowire.com.
Wait.
Yeah, we gotta wrap up here.
You gotta read one.
Oh yeah, we gotta get a hot take from our...
Oh, you're right. I didn't even ask for one. I'm sorry, guys. I am Sandhagen and Joker inside the distance. I will give you that with Joker Vince. Sandhagen and Joker inside the distance is the hot take. That is really freaking hot. But there you go. That's the chat hot take of the day. Yeah. Rotowire.com/free 10-day free trial to all the premium content. No credit card required. Listen after the fact on iTunes. This is a replay of the Friday night live broadcast on YouTube. Sorry, got me.
Yeah.
Chat. Nandalal Escobel with Escobel inside the distance.
Nandalal, sick troll, man. Sick troll.
That was good. That totally broke my rhythm. So well played.
What is next week? Are we in Brazil next week?
I don't know.
Oh wow.
That's really solid. I'm totally thrown off by somebody saying Escobel at the distance. Like that totally just messed with my head.
I think there's a better chance of Escobel and Jardine having sex in the octagon.
Like, dude, they're not even in the same fight. Let's get logical here.
Well, Jardine. No, Keith Jardine. They're married.
Oh,
dude.
Keith Jardine. I thought John DeRoba.
No, Jardine.
My mind was totally in the gutter.
Oh, my God. I think we should wrap up real quick.
Next week, we have 2 weeks before 237. Next week is Iaquinta versus Cerrone from Ottawa, Canada.
Ottawa. Okay.
All right, guys. You got all the wrap up. Follow all us on Twitter. Thanks to those guys in chat. It's always fun. Good luck in your contest. See you next week.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Yep.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.